case we will hear argument is Edelman v. Belco Title and Escrow. Mr. Cooley.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Dre Cooley, and I represent the plaintiffs' appellants, who are also the lenders in the transaction that is the subject of this appeal. In this case, the defendant, a title company, Belco, affirmatively admitted that it was acting exclusively as lender's agent for purposes of the closing that is the subject of this appeal. In fact, not only did the Belco admit it, the district court below also found that they were lender's agent. But not only lender's agent, they were solely and exclusively lender's agent. They had expressly disclaimed any allegiance or any agency to the borrowers, also known as Caseyville, in the closing of that transaction. The defendants have also admitted, though, despite the admission of agency, that they never contacted or communicated with lenders prior to or during closing. They never obtained or determined any closing or escrow instructions from the lenders at closing. And in fact, despite such failures, they went ahead and closed the transaction. And the closing of this transaction included ordering the title search, ordering the title commitment, reviewing that, signing the closing documents, and recording the mortgage. Throughout this process and prior to this process, and in fact not until 2 years after this process, did Belco ever contact or communicate with the party that it expressly admits was its sole and exclusive principal in the transaction. Remarkably, they did communicate and contact with someone during the transaction. Unfortunately, it was the borrower, not the lenders, a party to which Belco has also admitted it owed absolutely no duty. So therefore, we have a transaction in which there are two parties to the real estate transaction. Belco has expressly admitted its allegiance to one party, but in spite of that, went through with the transaction and completely ignored the party to who it had allegiance to and expressly relied upon and communicated to a third party or the other party in which it had expressly disclaimed any allegiance. Now, the only substantive defense that Belco has offered to this position is the fact that they say that they follow the terms of what's known as the Agency Escrow Disbursement Agreement. It was a document that was created by Belco at closing. The problem with this argument is that Belco further admits that they never received any closing or escrow instructions from lenders, and more importantly, that the Agency Escrow Disbursement Agreement was not a document that was ever seen by the lenders, was not a document that was ever signed by the lenders. In fact, the only party that signed it or saw it was the borrowers. So even if Belco followed whatever terms are in the Agency Escrow Disbursement Agreement, it doesn't fall that they actually don't have to respond or communicate to the lenders in this transaction. And in fact, we can articulate what Belco's argument is, which is simply they are arguing that they are somehow immunized from liability to the principal in the transaction because they followed the terms of what they believe to be the escrow instructions from which they admit were from solely from the borrower. And in arguing this case, they've exclusively relied upon one case. This is the Bridgeview Bank case. The Bridgeview Bank case stands for the axiomatic legal proposition that an escrowee or a closing agent has a duty to act solely in accordance with the instructions. Lenders agree with this. Defendant obviously agrees with this as well. The problem is that citing this in support of the position for Belco is that it presupposes instructions from the principal actually existed, and they simply did not at the time of closing. There were no instructions. There was never even any contact with the lenders, and in fact, the lenders didn't even know that this was going to be closing on the date that it closed. So for Belco to argue that they are immunized, it's simply inconsistent with black-letter agency law. But there are two reasons why this case is even more particularly concerning.
Counsel, what's your best case for the proposition that a closing agent has to do something other than its list of instructions?
I wouldn't even argue that that's untrue. I agree with that proposition. The problem is that it doesn't have a list of instructions.
Counsel, could you answer my question? I asked, what's your best case? Instead, you've chosen to dispute the question. I would appreciate it if you would answer the question.
Let me restate myself. I don't dispute the question. I think that the Bridgeview Bank...
What is your best case?
We're not arguing. We're not arguing the position that you're asking. The Bridgeview Bank case, the International Capital case, and the McBride case. The proposition in the International Capital and the McBride case, which are also cited by the defendants in this case, stand for the proposition that where there is an agency relationship, which there obviously is in a title company closing situation, where there is an agency relationship...
Shall I be more precise? What is your best case decided by a state court? Bridgeview Bank is decided by a U.S. district court.
The International Capital case... is a case that's cited by both parties. We are not arguing that the title company has to do something more than what's in the instructions. We're arguing the title company simply has to have instructions, and they didn't have instructions from the only party to which they proclaim was the party to which they owed any duty to. And so we have no dispute over the fact that if instructions existed from the principal in this case, that the title company would have been perfectly correct in relying solely upon whatever the terms of those instructions were. However, the problem is that there were no instructions from the principal in this case. The only purported instructions, if you can even call them, were from the borrower in this case, which again is concerning, not only because the defendant has already admitted that they had no allegiance to the borrower in this case, but more importantly that the borrower, Caseyville, was represented by Belsheim and Bruckert, and the evidence is consistent and all parties agree that the Belco was really just an extension of Belsheim and Bruckert. It was a title company that was started for purposes of these transactions, and the employees of Belsheim and Bruckert were also the employees of Belco. In fact, one of the employees of Belsheim and Bruckert admitted that his actions when he was performing duties on behalf of Belco were really done with his Belsheim hat. And so that's particularly concerning. The other reason why this was particularly concerning is the following, that under Illinois law, the law is that absent any type of disclaimer or absent any type of disclaiming responsibility, that a closing agent and an escrow agent has a duty to both parties, that they are the agent of both parties. That's the default under Illinois law. That's the McBride case, and that's the International Capital case. They both say that. However, in this case, so even if we were operating under default law, we would argue that they'd still have to actually approach both parties, because both parties are their principals. And the problem in the International Capital case and the McBride case is that they didn't do that, because there was a situation in which the escrow instructions didn't speak to a particular problem that arose, and the title company only went to one of the parties. It didn't go to both, and therefore there was a breach of fiduciary duty. But the key point here is that not only we don't have the Illinois default situation, we have an even more specific situation, a situation where the title company has said, I'm not an agent of the borrower, and the borrower agreed. It said, I'm an agent solely of the lenders. And what the borrowers would or what the title company would like you to believe is that there is a certain set of circumstances under Illinois law where an agent can close a transaction without ever communicating with its principal. And that is exactly what happened here. And because of that, and because it's inconsistent with black letter agency law under Illinois, we would ask you to reverse the district court's opinion. I see that I'm into my rebuttal, so I will reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Schooley. Mr. Long?
Good morning. I apologize, and I notified the office outside. My name is Daniel Konasek. I was originally scheduled to argue. I was in the trial in Cook County, and my trial settled. I was the principal attorney on this case, and I didn't notify your office in time. Judge, you asked what their best case was in Illinois, and he told you that it was the International case and the McBride case. And each of those cases, there were escrow instructions. And in each of those cases, the Illinois Appellate Court said that the escrow agent violated the escrow instructions. In the International case, by the way, it was not an escrow agency like you have here. It was a realty firm. And even in the opinion of International, the appellate court said that the trial court correctly relied upon the standards that are required of a realtor. They cited portions of the Illinois code that governs realtors, saying what the realtor should have done who was holding money, funds, for two parties to a transaction. And it said, in essence, what you did is you violated Marcus and Philip Millichap, the provision in the escrow agreement, paragraph 7, that said the earnest money shall be held by Marcus and Millichap for the mutual benefit of the parties. And in that case, Marcus and Millichap decided when there was a dispute to whom to give the money, and the court said you can't do that. McBride is the same thing, except that in McBride you had a bank, but in there they tendered a canceled deed as opposed to any funds. And again, there were specific escrow instructions saying you are to hold until the term of the closing is complete. And there the completion wasn't an actual termination because there was a closing. The completion was because there was a dispute. And the court once again said, by virtue of the terms of the escrow instructions, you couldn't choose one side over the other. So each of those cases are distinguishable from the facts that Judge Wilkerson was presented with in our case. But more importantly, Judge Wilkerson relied on Illinois case law, and going back to the Beskar case, and he said fundamentally, based on his review of the Illinois law, is that the escrow duty in this case, the agent's duty, is governed contractually. He did not extrapolate it to say that there's the general duty that's owed by a fiduciary to do A through Z. And his opinion is consistent, entirely consistent with Illinois law. There is no Illinois case rendered by either the Illinois Supreme Court or an Illinois appellate court that extends the duties of an agent such as Belcor in this case, an escrow agent, to do any of the four things that counsel is critical of in the complaint. And that's what Judge Wilkerson in his decision pointed out. If I were to answer the question, the best case is the Northern District case by Judge Kennelly for counsel representing the plaintiffs. And Judge Kennelly, in what I would say was extra comment, extrapolated the duty. But and I say this with all respect, he did it relying on the Marshall versus Burger King case. That's a tort case. And Illinois has always said that in tort law, in deciding duty, we're going to look at foreseeability. So his analysis on foreseeability was correct. But this is not a tort case. Illinois law is also consistent that breach of fiduciary duty is an agency relationship that is non-tort. It's a contractual relationship. You cannot apply tort principles to the relationship that existed here. And therefore, Judge Wilkerson correctly said, I'm left with the agency agreement that's identified as Exhibit 6 in the record of all the depositions in the Rule 56 motion, and the relationship here. The only thing that Belcor was to do was to make disbursements pursuant to a HUD-1 statement, and those disbursements in the HUD-1 statement had been identified in the record as Exhibit 65. And in the HUD-1 statement, the company, Belcor, was directed to disperse $3,789 in settlement charges that were not paid by the plaintiffs in this case, but in fact were paid by the borrower. In this case, there is absolutely no evidence, and I think the plaintiffs conceded, that all the money at issue, the $3 million, never, ever, ever, ever was in the hands of Belcor. That money had been distributed in the case of Edelman, Sue, and I apologize, the other plaintiff, not Jeffries, but the other plaintiff, the money had been distributed by a booking entry. These plaintiffs had been involved in another deal with the same company, and they simply booked the money from one transaction to this new phase two transaction, and they did so before this closing April 25th ever took place. In particular, with Mr. Jeffries, one of the plaintiffs here, he gave cash to the borrower before, not only before a closing, but before he even executed the loan agreement. And then the loan agreement that Judge Wilkerson was discussing in the underlying case, he said the loan agreement itself doesn't contemplate an escrow closing. This wasn't an escrow closing because they never had any money. The plaintiffs didn't request in the loan document an escrow closing that would have protected their money, right? I mean, a general closing was escrow agent, you hold the funds until I get A, B, C to protect my money. That never happened here. The loan agreement itself in the underlying case, that protected the people's money. And in the loan agreement, in the second paragraph, it lists what the borrower has to do before the funds are dispersed. One of them was to make sure that a mortgage is issued and it has a first priority. And the second was that they have a title commitment showing, in fact, there is no other lien that would be ahead of their $3 million. So the people, the plaintiffs in this case, had the protection necessary to protect their $3 million. They simply gave the money before they ever asked for the protection. And I think that's what Judge Wilkerson was referring to when he was talking about the sort of bizarre circumstances that happened here. And it wasn't part of the record that in the summary judgment, but this case was on the eve of trial. And it is contained within the record in the sense that it's in the depositions. If you see the relationship between the Richardsons and some of the plaintiffs, a lot of it sheds light on why the transaction took place in the manner in which it did, and why the money was given before there was any evidence that their money would be protected by a mortgage and that there would be no mortgages ahead of theirs. The other, can I point out one other thing? It looks like I have time. When the plaintiffs brought this case and he raised insinuating that there was some sort of nefarious conduct on the part of the law firm, we had filed a summary judgment, and on the eve that the summary judgment was going to be ruled upon or before trial, they voluntarily dismissed the law firm with prejudice. So Belsheim and Bruckert was dismissed from this case with prejudice, leaving only Belco before Judge Wilkerson entered his order granting summary judgment. But when they pursued the case, they didn't pursue the borrower on a fraud. They pursued the law firm and this Belco. And in order to bootstrap Belco in, they relied on the very agency agreement, Exhibit 6, that they now say wasn't executed by the parties here. And so if I'm hearing them right, they're now saying there's this general duty because Belco sat and did not a closing. The only document that was executed was a mortgage by the borrower, not the lender. The lender executed nothing at this closing because no funds were transferred. They had already been transferred. There was nothing done in this instance for the lender. A mortgage was recorded, and that's it. That's not a closing. So they want to say that there's a general duty. Belco, as a general proposition, owes some duty. It's governed by laws of agency. There's no evidence in this record that there was ever an agreement between these parties other than what's been identified as Exhibit 6. None. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Konasek. Mr. Cooley.
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to boil this case down to its simplest form. And that form is this. We can look at the extraneous circumstances about when loan funds were transferred. It doesn't really matter. The issue is that Belko has admitted that for purposes of closing, which included obtaining a title search, obtaining a title commitment, and recording a mortgage, and filling out the closing documents, that they were my client's agents. Notwithstanding that, they never contacted my clients.
Now where in Exhibit 6 can you point to that?
Exhibit 6?
Agency relationship.
Exhibit 6, which actually is, refer to it as the appendix. It's also the appendix. I assume you're referring to the agency escrow disbursement agreement.
Yes.
If you look at paragraph 2, we understand and agree for the purposes of this closing, Belko Title and Escrow is acting only as the agent of the lending institution and does not represent either the seller or the buyer-borrower as an attorney. And the borrower signed this. I'd also point out that this is not the source of the agency. We're not arguing it's the source of the agency. It's certainly an admission that agency exists. But all parties, including the district court, recognize that they were our exclusive agent. And so the argument that counsel has made that there are instructions in the agency disbursement agreement that they complied with is inapt, because those, even if you consider them to be instructions, are not instructions of the party to which they admit were their agent or were their principal. So there is this concept that if they have the responsibility of closing this transaction, obtaining a title commitment, which certainly and explicitly indicated that there was a prior mortgage on this, and ironically, that they did send it to one party, the title commitment, they sent it to the borrower. If we're going to allow them to do that, that would be fundamentally inconsistent with black-letter agency law. And for that reason, we would respectfully ask that you reverse the court's decision below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooley. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.